Coming down the aisle at a combined weight of 436 pounds, the team of Jeffrey Martin, Brian Berga, the Jersey Wrecking Crew.
And that can only mean one thing. That means you're listening to the High Spot Podcast, episode 70, and getting better each and every time. The Jersey Wrecking Crew here, Jeff Martin, Brian Berga, breaking down Raw and SmackDown. A lot of big surprises after the Superstar Shakeup, Jeff. And also, you know, going to be previewing a little bit of, the card's getting a little bit better. We're not going to preview it exactly, but, you know, it is starting to get there, developing the card for Payback. And what a bitch that is, Jeff.
Seth Rollins said it's a bitch.
It is.
We're going to keep saying it as much as possible.
Bitch. And looking forward to
bitch,
speaking. Looking forward to our guest, Barry Blaustein. Guys know him if you've been living under a rock. One of the documentaries that opened my eyes and, you know, started making me not believe in Santa Claus was Beyond the Mat. It took you on a journey, probably one of the best, in my opinion, wrestling documentaries. Jeff, I'll hear your take on this of all time. So we have him on, talking about WrestleMania weekend, Hall of Fame, some great stories, international Paul Heyman, because all of it revolves around that, Jake Roberts. So a lot of interesting stories here from Barry. You know, he not only does those documentaries, he does writing for Saturday Night Live.
But a professor who's actually open to love and wrestling. Don't see that too much. So Barry Blaustein will join us from Beyond the Mat. Of course, one of the best wrestling documentaries out there, Beyond the Mat. So looking forward to catching up with Barry, man. Good get to talk about this week. So listen, man, 70 episodes in, and boy, it's funny, man. Looking back at what we used to do, we were going to do sports, and then we were like, hey, you know what, let's talk about something that we love. And, you know, wrestling was it. It was our passion, and I'll put it on you, man. You said, hey, listen, it's fun to talk about sports and football, but everyone does it. Everyone talks about wrestling, though, but we're trying to change things, trying to do it our way. And, man, I want to thank you, man, for opening my eyes to doing a wrestling podcast because, hey, it's been fun, hasn't been work. So looking forward to another 70 more with my tag team partner, the Trend Center.
It's been a work in progress, to say the least. I think right now at episode 70, folks, if you've been listening to it this long at High Spot Podcast, God bless you. I think we're getting better each single time, and that's the purpose because, you know, Jeff had mentioned before, and you know, I think when we reach episode 100, we'll have a reflection of everything that happened leading up to it. But just to keep it short, I think it was an idea that kind of spawned that we wanted to do something. We didn't know what it was, and ultimately it led to our passion, which is professional wrestling, and that's what we're talking about now.
So I had great interviews and more interviews lined up down the road. So again, like I said, I got to thank the Trendsetter here for opening my eyes to make this the podcast that we both wanted to do and have a passion for it. So it's going to be awesome. And for the 70th show, we could talk about Braun Strowman and Big Show breaking the ring. We can talk about AJ Styles and, you know, his push for United States Championship against Kevin Owens. We can talk about so many things, but what we're going to open up with is Jinder Mahal. Yes, that's right. Don't think that we made a mistake. No, Jinder.
I'm sorry.
No, Jinder Mahal. And
Jinder Mahal.
Listen, can I start off with this rant here before you interject? Listen, everyone, I hear you complain, the wrestling fan, and this is where I get upset. John Cena wins too much. Randy Orton's been champion 100 times. Oh my God, they only push these guys. Roman Reigns, oh my God, I can't stand him. Why do they cheer for him? And then I got to hear news breaks before even SmackDown came on that Jinder Mahal is going to win the six-pack challenge and become the number one contender for the WWE championship. And I'm like, okay. I had to do a double take, but I was like, okay, it could be false reports, it could be fake news. But no, he ends up winning it. And now there's fans, you know, with the memes and the things on Twitter saying, oh, how could they give Jinder Mahal? Sami Zayn, he deserves it. How come Baron Corbin is not involved in the match? Oh, this and that. Wah, wah, wah. And it's crying. I don't get it. Wrestling fans, what do you want? What exactly is it? Now you don't like it because it's not Sami Zayn. Jinder Mahal, hey, listen, Guy is ripped. The guy's busted his ass. He's jobbed like God knows what. His win-loss record, you know how important that is like, you know, 10 in 1,000. And this guy came back, signed with the WWE. He knew he's most likely going to be one of the enhancement talents that they're going to use because they needed to bulk up the rosters. And hey, look at this guy. Besides the fact that I was upset at him because he legitimately stiffed, you know, Finn Balor a few weeks ago, the guy's been a hard worker, and why doesn't he deserve an opportunity to, you know, advance and become a main eventer? I mean, on SmackDown, it's the land of opportunity. Why not give Jinder Mahal this chance? A lot of people are going to say, well, because they're trying to get into India, they're trying to market in there. Well, you know what? I remember Muhammad Hassan. Do you remember those wrestlers? Hey, listen, SmackDown's been known to do this. And good for Jinder Mahal, man. I'm not the ones to hinder Jinder, hashtag. I'm more of the ones that I want to be full-blown. Listen, they have a pay-per-view in about a month. It's called Backlash. They need filler. They need a guy to get in there and have a shot. Why not Jinder Bright? And that makes me so mad about the wrestling fan who will be like, oh, I don't like the Roman Reigns. Oh, I don't like John Cena. Oh, Randy Orton. Oh, this, oh, that. And then when they give a guy like Jinder Mahal an opportunity, oh, you cry at that. Oh, my God. Give me a break. You can't have your cake and eat it, too. Now, wrestling fans, I'm going to get on you. You are so freaking picky. Live with it. Jinder Mahal, listen, congrats, my man. You're doing a good job. I think the promo you did afterwards was good, too. The Bollywood boys are going to get involved, so it's going to be like a group thing, faction. Go for it. I'm down. SmackDown Live continues to be the better show. I don't care how many people go to Raw. I don't care, as long as AJ's there, it's still the best show. Jinder, congrats to you. Great job. Done. Whoa. Mic drop. I'm out of here, bro. You can do the whole show by yourself.
Okay. Well, I wouldn't ask for anything more. After that, how can I come back with anything? But, yeah, I think you have a point when it comes to, wrestling fans. And, hey, I understand that feeling, too. We want something different. We don't want to keep seeing the same thing over and over again. But here's the thing. We're seeing something different. I can go back to WrestleMania. Everybody wanted Braun Strowman to win the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal. He had so much momentum going. It was a travesty they didn't win it. Mojo Riley won it because of Rob Gronkowski. Really? Okay, you live with it because it's something different. Am I a huge fan of a guy like Mojo Rawley? No, but again, it's something different. Jinder Mahal, a guy like you mentioned before, was basically just in purgatory. He was part of a 3-man band and was complete, waste of time, just jobbing every which way. But again, hey, he was getting a paycheck, so he was earning a living. That's what he was doing. He's putting food on the table for his family. Can't fault the guy for that. And now he comes back looking better than ever. Has somewhat of a personality, and the WWE, believe it or not, is actually giving this guy a chance. Something we've never seen before with somebody different. All I can say is just give it some time before we bury it, because, hey, I wasn't a huge fan of Baron Corbin. Still am not, but you know what? He's showing me something. Let them try to fail. Let them go to the point that if they fall flat on their face, then let's pick on them. And with Jinder, I'm actually excited for him because it's something different. We know the Baron Corbins is coming. We know the Luke Harpers, the Eric Rowans might happen as well, and blah, 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 and the list goes on. But right now, a show like SmackDown Live, which before the Superstar Shakeup, lacked a lot of depth. And with the depth they had around it, did such a great job of going over what Raw could do with all the depth they had in their roster. Now I feel it's turned the other way around. Now SmackDown Live has the superstars you want to go see. Not that they didn't before. And with a guy like Jinder Mahal, who is he really taking a spot away from right now? Storyline-wise, they're still trying to finish off Bray Wyatt and Randy Orton. So it's not hurting anybody here, guys. Relax. Don't worry about it, because you know what? Before you know it, it'll be over, and then we'll start complaining that the same guys are getting the same opportunities over and over.
They're the same people that are saying, oh, this Randy Orton run, why did they take that off of Bray? Oh, this Randy Orton, he shouldn't be the champion. And now you have a guy that's going to challenge Randy Orton, maybe beat him. Let the guy enjoy his month in the sun. Let the guy enjoy however long this lasts. You know how many people don't even get one run, and Ginger's getting one run at it, so let him
try. I'm sure he never thought he would get a run.
I know, but hey, he's opened eyes. He's shown people that he's been a hard worker. Oh, yeah. And you have this opportunity on SmackDown Live, man. The best of Jinder Mahal. Again, very impressed by the promo that he did. I like pairing up with the Bollywood boys. Kind of makes him stronger, a faction. But you know where this is going.
Gives him that heat.
This is the elitist who thinks, he's well-cultured, well-mannered, and he's better than anyone. I just hope they don't over-stereotype it like, before, where they make you, you know, do stuff for cash and stuff like that. Well, I hope they
they'll make him royalty. He's better than
I don't
want to
see
superior.
That. Then like, going too far.
I would like him to keep the same mentality he has right now. Just feels like he has nothing to lose, and guys like Randy Orton and everybody else has everything to lose. But again, give us something different. And I think for a guy like Jinder, who's busted his ass to get where he is right now, I think it's well deserved. And again, guys, let's just try to enjoy the ride and see what they give us.
Were you a fan of Randy Orton coming in and just kind of like ignoring Jinder Mahal and talking about his House of Horrors match against Bray Wyatt and kind of then just cutting off? I think kind of like killed Jinder's steam. I don't know. It's just kind of weird to me that
they
did that.
It's pretty awkward when that happened.
Like they did two segments into one.
Yeah, it was kind of like a slap of disrespect. But who knows? Maybe they'll start using that within the storylines. What I think Jinder, I mean, I heard his promo he did on SmackDown in the middle of the ring after he won the number one contendership. But I actually liked what he said during talking smack with Shane McMahon and Renee Young, where he's the kind of guy, he goes out there and says, I expect to be in this position. He's not afraid. He's not intimidated by the moment as much as Shane McMahon tried to poke at him. And, you know, be careful, Shane, what happens when you poke the bear too many times? It's going to bite you. And I think Jinder Mahal right now can go with that mentality, Jeff, that, you know, he has nothing to lose. The pressure's on a guy like Randy Orton. So right now, storyline-wise, is overlooking a guy like him. And right now, I know he's worried about Bray Wyatt, but you should worry about what's right in front of you. And a guy like Jinder Mahal is no joke and nobody to take lightly. Ask Finn Balor.
I know, and we got Payback coming up soon, a Raw event. You have a mix of SmackDown guys on there, too. So it's going to be a good, you know, good pay-per-view. A lot of good matches on that card. But
that's probably one of the biggest upsets we saw this week on SmackDown Live, which just shows you, Jeff, they're doing great storylines because we're talking about this first and foremost.
Definitely. I mean, we could have led with something else, but the talk of the whole week has been Jinder Mahal and his push. And you
good
know,
for him.
Good for him. Alexa Bliss becomes a new number one contender on Raw. Your thoughts? I mean, she's picking up where she left off. Her and Bayley should be an interesting fight at Payback if they choose to go at it at Payback. Hey, listen, Alexa Bliss, MVP, really has a bright future. And again, here, I could see her really take the title from Bayley.
Yeah, I do. I'm not surprised.
Make an impact, really, on
the first
time.
I mean, definitely show her dominance. I mean, she was dominant on SmackDown Live. She comes right off the bat and does it. And we can kind of compare the same thing with Charlotte, and I'll get to in a second, though. You know, picking off right where they left off and accepting nothing but that main event role and that title picture role. I was kind of surprised, though, believe it or not, Jeff, because, you know, I expect Alexa Bliss to become Raw Women's Champion. I don't know if it was immediately going to happen because I think they were still trying to hash things out with Sasha Banks and Bayley. Nia Jax was showing her dominance, so I didn't think that Alexa was going to come in right away and get it. I thought she was going to start a rivalry with Mickie James. But, hey, you know, you can't fault it, and, hey, I'm all sold for it because right now Alexa Bliss and Bayley looks pretty good as a main event match for Payback.
I mean, it does, too, and we're talking on the flip side with Charlotte. She kind of had a, I guess, had a welcoming committee waiting for her when she came down to SmackDown, when you had, you know, Carmella and Natalya and Tamina. They're waiting for her with James Ellsworth. You know, it's going to be a little hard for Charlotte, but, hey, she proved it. She's the new number one contender for the SmackDown Women's Championship against Naomi. And, listen, I think it's just a matter of time before that title goes to the queen. And, hey, listen. You know, all kudos to Charlotte. She's going to prove to be one of the MVPs of that whole shakeup between the Raw and the SmackDown rosters. But I got to say to you, I think they're given a great opportunity, and Charlotte's going to become the champion, you know. And Alexa Bliss, again, truly the MVP of SmackDown, and now going to shoot her way and become the MVP of Raw.
Oh, yeah, no question about that. They're given opportunities. But here's the thing, Jeff, and here, I'm not kissing anybody's butt, but they've earned their opportunities.
Oh, yeah,
they've busted their butt since the, you know, the days of NXT, as it was building up this whole women's revolution, and people want to call it Give Divas a Chance and blah, blah, blah. It's definitely worked its way on.
It's not like my friend says they're blah, 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 blah.
Oh, no, I don't do it that bad blah, like that, no. But, you know, they've definitely earned their opportunities and proven that they can, you know, live up to those expectations. Now, for a rivalry like Charlotte and Naomi, I won't get too much into this. I think they kind of maybe, in my opinion, missed an opportunity here because they've wrestled before when Charlotte was part of you know, the team with Paige and Becky Lynch, and they were facing Sasha, Tamina, and Naomi. And what ended up happening in this match on SmackDown, this didn't really seem to be a lot of chemistry between the two. It looked a lot of hesitation. And yeah, I kind of put a lot of it, as much as Charlotte was working her butt off to make Naomi look good, Naomi looked like maybe the pressure was getting to her a little bit. So
I definitely could see that. Definitely could see that. Now you're going into the big leagues with Charlotte.
Yeah, here's the thing. And she had mentioned before the Superstar Shakeup how she wanted to kind of test her skills against somebody like Charlotte. She's done that before in the past. We're not naive. We know it's happened before. But, you know, living up to those expectations is a completely different thing. And Naomi right now being a very, young champion in terms of this is her second title reign but didn't really have a first title reign.
Yeah, let's say her first title reign.
Let's say her first one.
The other one was short-lived.
This one is a big test for her. And ultimately, it's like from a booking standpoint, what do you do? Because Charlotte, a loss from Charlotte won't hurt her. But at the same time, will a win from Naomi against Charlotte help elevate her even more? I don't know right now. So that's an interesting dynamic as opposed to Alexa Bliss and Bayley, where Alexa Bliss is the perfect foil to a Bayley right now at this moment.
It's tough too, man, because Charlotte on her way out, they kind of had her lose. I mean, she's lost her pay-per-view streak. She lost a bunch of matches to, and she lost to Nia Jax at the end, where she almost lost her head too, by the way, Nia Jax. to have her lose and be the number one contender, that could possibly kind of, put a little, crack in the armor of Charlotte too, as her pedestal, as her, I guess I would say her character would kind of put a little crack in the armor.
I don't think so, and the reason why I say this is she's done so much. I mean, they even mentioned her resume as she walked into SmackDown Live. And there's no question, Jeff, as she was exiting Raw, they're doing everything they can to kind of make her move less significant. Now, I don't know if that was done from a writing standpoint. I don't really know if Raw and SmackDown really do compete with each other, but that's what it seemed out to be, that they're really trying to make Charlotte's move less significant by focusing more on the dominance of a woman like Nia Jax, who almost killed Charlotte in their last match together. If Charlotte were to lose this one, I don't really think it would be anything down on her, because from what I got, the first impressions were, and it's that weird thing, like, you and I aren't performers, but you can kind of tell when two people lock up, there's something there. I didn't feel that with Naomi and Charlotte. Timing was off. It looked like both were kind of trying to figure each other out. Let's see what happens. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt first time. But again, first impressions are very important. So for me, I think more pressure is on a woman like Naomi. Charlotte has kind of cemented her legacy in a way. She still has a lot more to prove. She has to win that SmackDown Women's Championship. It's just a matter of time. I don't know if it happened that early. But I think right now, this rivalry really depends on what you do with Naomi, because she had that storybook ending at WrestleMania. Now, is this going to be a story, or is it just a fluke reign?
So we'll both women out. That crossed over now are the number one contenders. So we'll find out down the road whether they can take advantage and capitalize with it being the new number one contenders on their prospective brands. One thing also I want to ask is, I just was shaking my head Raw, and then I'm watching Dean Ambrose and The Miz actually starting another program after they just fought about a few months ago, and I'm like, and let me steal The Miz's phrase, really? Like, I mean, that's what they're going to do. They're going to give us another Miz and Dean Ambrose feud for the Intercontinental Championship. Wait a minute, did we not just see Maryse smack Renee Young on SmackDown, and now we're supposed to forget that happened on SmackDown? We gotta see this. I was not into their rivalry on SmackDown. I think they just didn't have that chemistry. I think this whole interaction they had on Miz TV before really didn't do anything for me. And again, this is to me, I don't know whether Dean Ambrose needs to have the right person as an opponent to feed off of, but I think the Baron Corbin one match was kind of a lackluster too, and I don't think it was on Baron Corbin's spot either. I just am not a fan of the whole lackadaisical, nonchalant, caring Dean Ambrose. It just, to me, when I see Dean Ambrose, I want to see more Brian Pillman-ish. I know that's not in the cards at all, but that's what I like to see. I don't like this, I don't like that Dean Ambrose.
Well, first of all, let me say that there is no other Brian Pillman. There's only one Brian Pillman,
yes,
and a guy who's so ahead of his time. You can imagine if he was still around this time right now. God knows the brilliance of a guy like Brian Pillman. I see your point, Jeff. I know we're trying to get at, but to me, a guy like Dean Ambrose, I mean, you say you want to see him a little bit like Brian Pillman. I don't think he wants to do that. He's his own entity. I'll give credit where credit is due. Dean Ambrose does a very great job of being very unique. Nobody else is like him, and that's great in terms of establishing your character. But as a champion, I think, I try to give credit where credit is due. I tried to kind of give it time. But to me, Dean Ambrose, first of all, I don't think he needs a title. But that has nothing to do with the fact that he's established. I think that when he has a title, it just doesn't mean anything, in my opinion. a guy like Dean Ambrose, who's supposed to relate to the crowd as opposed to one of their own, I don't think he has that connection. They like him because he's crazy. He's kind of a loose cannon in a sense, like Brian Pillman. You don't know what he's going to say, what he's going to do. But in terms of people rallying behind him like they did, like a Daniel Bryan is a perfect example. I don't think I get that sense from the audience. So with Dean Ambrose's whole Intercontinental title reign, I don't know what's going on. Hey, say if you give it to The Miz, what more is going to happen? He's done all he can with that title.
I didn't think Chris Jericho's title, Intercontinental title reigns would be ever broken. I think there's a good chance that Miz could be a 20-time Intercontinental champion. Because I just think that The Miz and the Intercontinental title are like made for each other. And what more can Miz do with the Intercontinental title, though? Like, what more can he do with
it? Which comes to my point, like you said. And if he did break the record, hey, well-deserved for him. Because The Miz has done a great job and has worked really hard to get himself to that point. And we've spoken before what he's done with the Intercontinental title while he was on SmackDown Live. But like you said, I think right now he's in the situation where he should be in the main event category, where he should be actually, if not competing, close to storylines where he is glancing at the Universal title. But when you have a guy like Brock Lesnar who has it and he's not around that much anymore, it really hurts it. So I don't know. With this storyline, Jeff, I've seen it before. It wasn't good the first time. I doubt the second go-around is going to be any better.
And I mean, in one spot, I think they're just burying the Intercontinental title. And on the other, they're trying to revive the U.S. championship. And it's just a head scratcher because you could do the same thing with the Intercontinental title. It just do the same thing. But I like the slow build between Kevin Owens and AJ Styles. I'm a huge fan. I can see AJ Styles fight all the time. I am salivating for a AJ Styles versus Kevin Owens feud. I think that's going to be awesome. I think I read somewhere the face that runs the place against the new face of America. How awesome is that going to be when they lock horns eventually? Because I think Jericho is going to end up losing, and I think we'll see Jericho right off into the sunset with Fozzy, and Kevin Owens, I think, is going to, you know, come out of payback as a champion, and then we're going to see a tremendous feud with AJ Styles.
Yeah, I mean, it's no secret. I think, you know, we don't even have to predict that for payback. We'll do that, you know, next week as we break down the card. But yeah, I see the same thing. Kevin Owens will be the, you know, the new, I don't know if he's the new face of America, but he will be the face of that United States Championship for a while. And the rivalry with AJ Styles is great in two sense, that they're going to have great matches. This is something that's been building up since last year's Royal Rumble, where people wanted to see AJ Styles and Kevin Owens. Basically, Kevin Owens eliminated him from the Royal Rumble in his debut in the WWE. So they have that story behind them. And secondly, too, it gives the ability to hide AJ Styles for a little bit. What I mean hide him is that, you know, I ultimately want him back in the main event title picture. I want him to be the WWE champion again. But you have a babyface like Randy Orton. And let's not kid ourselves, folks. AJ Styles is now a babyface. After WrestleMania, he is now one of the babyfaces on SmackDown Live. You don't want him to get lost in the shuffle. So to go for a secondary title is intriguing because his first title in this company was the WWE Championship. Now, you might call it a demotion. I don't know. But I think he, with Kevin Owens, can make the United States title, do I dare say it, bring back relevancy to that title. It has a lot of history behind it as well, like the Intercontinental Championship. I think they can do that.
I mean, you know, again, I'm so looking forward to that, and I think that, yes, they will elevate that U.S. title with just their series of matches. I think it's not just going to be one, but you're going to see, like, two or three.
And with a guy like AJ and Kevin, they can actually make that title even more important than the WWE Championship.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be one of the best feuds of the year, so looking forward to that. But, you know, what I'm looking forward to right now is talking to Barry Blaustein from Beyond the Mat, director of that great documentary.
Great get, by the way, Jeff.
When you think about wrestling documentaries, you think about Beyond the Mat. That and maybe, you know, Wrestling with Shadows, the Bret Hart story. But
that was a good
We grew up with that. That was right smack dab in the Attitude Era. So we had a chance to talk to him about, you know, just, you know, Jake the Snake Roberts, Mick Foley, WrestleMania. You know, talk about that. Talk about what he's up to. And of course, we also talked about ECW and just how great it was to meet Paul Heyman, which we're very jealous about. But hey, our interview with Barry Blaustein.
We're jealous of everybody.
Now, and we talk about him being a professor at Chapman University and just how that goes with his students. Here's Barry Blaustein. All right, Brian, I'm excited to have this guest on. Very special guest here on the High Spot Podcast. Barry Blaustein. All right, you may know him as a comedy writer, best known for Saturday Night Live and his screenplays, Coming to America. Who hasn't seen that? The Nutty
that's
Professor.
That's like a movie classic.
Boomerang.
Right there.
Oh, man, I can tell you some stories about watching Boomerang with some lady friends. But, of course, best known to us wrestling fans for Beyond the Mat, a great documentary series in 1999. And Barry, man, it's almost like nearing 20-plus years, and still that documentary is very well talked about, Barry. How's everything going?
Good, good. I just want to mention that I wrote those movies with my writing partner, David Sheffield.
Oh, David Sheffield. Awesome, awesome. We'll get to those movies, too, but how's everything going, man? So now a professor at Chapman University, And, you know, I've never had too many college professors also professors just be wrestling fans. So you break the mold when it comes to professors.
Yes, yes. I try not to talk about wrestling in class.
Hey, but
every year there's one or two students who come up to me and goes, I loved your movie. Can I come by your office and talk wrestling? I'm going, anytime.
Hey, but if, you know, like WrestleMania comes up, you got to talk. You at least got to spend the first 5 minutes on it. Hey, anyone catch WrestleMania? And how you?
I brought that up. I actually was in class the other week, and I said, well, anybody plans this weekend? Anybody going to watch WrestleMania? And they looked at me like, what the hell are you talking about?
I tell you what, Barry, I don't get this generation. I don't.
We've lost the innocence that they're not watching wrestling. Barry, did you catch WrestleMania?
Yes, I think I did. It was so long, I don't know.
I couldn't tell if I was
at
watching.
What point in and out of consciousness, what parts did you catch?
You know, I watched it from the beginning, and
God bless you, Barry.
This is not a comment on the last two matches, but I could, by the time they were on, no, the last three matches, I should say, the women's clusterfuck was I went out to grab something to eat. But even to the Triple H and Seth Rollins match, I was like going, it's too long. And by the time the last match came, again, nothing on the quality of the opponents, the participants, but I'm just going, 7 hours is too long for anything.
Yeah, no, in the era we live in now, it's like, you know, we want our instant gratification. Those 7 hours is tough for WrestleMania.
Yeah, there's a number one rule of show business is leave them wanting more. Not begging it to be over.
But would you say WrestleMania this year, we were there, we were in Orlando, so it was great. Would you say it was a good show altogether, but the matches were so-so? What would your assessment of Mania be for this year?
I thought the matches were good. There were just too many of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you're putting on a whole show, so there has to be a better pace to it. And there's just too... I don't need to see every single person in WrestleMania.
I know WWE kind of wants to, you know, I mean, just have all the guys there at kind of like a reward for, you know, their hard work at the end of the year. But which match were you the biggest fan of?
More money.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone wants to get paid.
If you want to reward them, give them more money.
Yeah.
What matches were I a fan of? You know, they
or the ones you were looking forward to the most?
You know what I was not looking forward to and I enjoyed? And I was shocked, was the Goldberg-Lesnar match.
Yeah.
I know why.
I had such low expectations. I thought, wow, they did it was quick. It was fast. And it wasn't on too long. And I think they did a great job putting those two as good as possible. The Shane, I love AJ Styles. And, you know, I can watch him do anything. And I thought that was a good match. The Kevin Owens match I thought was good. The best match I thought was the return of the Hardy Boys in there. I thought everybody in that did a great job. That was a perfectly constructed match.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It had the loudest pop. They kind of tried to swerve us thinking that New Day was actually going to compete, and everybody was chanting delete, and pleasant surprise. It's those quote-unquote now WrestleMania moments, which we all now tend to, I guess,
right.
Promote more
I
and
thought
more.
One of the things that took me, I don't know why I was so surprised, how good and how well they used New Day as the host.
Yeah, it wasn't too much. Yeah.
And when they were on, they did the welcome, and then when they came online, it was a real good purpose. They did that swerve really well.
They did. I was a little disappointed. I wanted that pyro coming out, not New Day. But again, that's that's a different thing. It's something about WrestleMania that I always enjoy too, more than anything, that I always feel starts like whatever he says WrestleMania weekend, is the Hall of Fame. I'm always a big fan of it, and to see guys like Kurt Angle and even Beth Phoenix is what most people might say, you know, why is she in the Hall of Fame right now so early in her career? Was there anything particularly from the Hall of Fame that you took away? Did you like seeing Kurt Angle there? Was the Rock and Roll Express a great addition?
I liked Kurt Angle there. I liked Dallas's speech. I thought he was really good. Anytime I can watch Jim Cornette speak forever. Again, it's long.
Wait, so you can't
so,
you can't stand a 7-hour yeah, wrestling show, but you can watch Jim Cornette talk forever.
No,
is what you're
yeah,
talking.
I could.
You know, I enjoyed the show. I mean, guys go on too long and all that stuff, but that's part of it.
Something I wanted to ask you, though, talking about the Hall of Fame, you mentioned Diamond Dallas Page, and he had quoted, you know, a big inspiration. One of his mentors was Jake the Snake. Now, going back to the movie that I saw, Beyond the Mat, and you know, you following Jake the Snake, Mick Foley, and Terry Funk, How do you feel? How did you feel personally when you did that document at the time it was, and then seeing Jake a couple of years ago being inducted in the Hall of Fame? It seems to be in a better place. What feeling was that? Did you have?
I'm happy for him. Anybody can come back from what he was coming back from. I think it's wonderful. I hope he can sustain it. And I think Dallas did a real interest. You know, Dallas was originally going to be in the documentary.
Okay.
What happened is, at first I was negotiating with WCW, and I went down there to Atlanta, and actually I went to the first Nitro in Minnesota, and I went to the power plant.
Yeah, and yes, he was, the WCW power plant.
He was a wrestler, but just moving transition from becoming from a wrestler, from manager to being a wrestler, and he came up to me. He says, "I understand you're doing a documentary, and this is why I should be in it." And he convinced me he should be in it. And then, unfortunately, I couldn't close the deal with WCW, so I couldn't be in it. But I was very impressed with Dallas.
Well, that's a good thing, man. I mean, there's a guy that approaches you, and, you know, he's doing anything to get noticed. So, I mean, you know.
It was really smart because most of the guys were staying away from me, especially at that point. He just walked up to me and said, "I'm willing to do it."
So even then, you know, it just shows that, you know, you need to take chances. You need to, you know, step up and go outside, even though people are kind of going, you know, behind and not doing anything. It's good to be proactive, right?
Oh, sure. In any career, it's good to be proactive. You know, one thing I tell my students, if you sit around waiting for something to happen, it never will. You've got to manufacture your own breaks and then be ready to take advantage of them when it happens.
Now, another interesting thing that you've done is I was watching National Geographic, and then I saw you're like a correspondent, and you did kayfabe. And, you know, that's something that I was talking to Brian about, and we're talking about certain wrestlers, and we're talking about how now this is social media, Instagram, Twitter that we use now, and, you know, there's no more secrets. And we're talking about guys that, for example, WrestleMania is a perfect example. That Bray Wyatt Randy Orton match kind of was, to me, was the worst of the night, just with those images of the cockroaches and maggots and stuff like that. I want to talk about Bray Wyatt for you for a second. Here's a guy that maybe if his character was in the 80s, it would be more over. He would be more significant now. But I think with, you know, breaking the kayfabe now that we have in social media and just, you know, seeing a bunch of pictures of all of them being friends outside of, you know, WWE, what do you think? Do you think that social media hurts kayfabe right now for a guy like Bray Wyatt?
I think Bray Wyatt's great. I'm not a big fan of all that stuff about, you know, his sister Abigail and the House of Horrors and all that stuff. Really, I look at Bray Wyatt and he could be Jake.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause he's that good, interesting on the microphone. I think he's this stuff. They found this image for him and they're just stuck with it and keep shoving. And it's the same thing over and over again. And, for, you know, not that wins count in wrestling, but it'd be nice to see him win every once in a while.
Yeah, it would, actually, especially WrestleMania 30.
But to me, you know, there's stuff for every, you know, I realize they're programmed to a broad audience. So there's stuff for kids, there's stuff for people. And so anytime they go to the cult stuff, it never interests me.
Well, speaking of that, though, Barry, you had mentioned how, like, they're shoving this type of character of Bray Wyatt down our throats, and that's why it was becoming kind of stale. What's your opinion on somebody that everybody always talks about is Roman Reigns? Here's a guy that has the look, has the potential, has the appeal for anybody in terms of what you think builds a WWE superstar, and it seems like the audience rejects him because they feel he's being force-fed down their throats. Do you see that?
That's okay. They react when he comes out.
Yes.
He's over.
He's that lightning rod.
He gets the biggest reaction. And, you know, it was like Cena when they started booing him and they acknowledged it. He acknowledged it. Cena's been over for a long time, but it goes to, in the new world of social media and the so-called smart fan, wrestlers adjust, and they are adjusting to that.
Should they adjust in the fact where they're keeping him a babyface?
What?
Sorry, I said, should they shove him to the fact where they're still going to keep him a babyface, or is a heel turn not even necessary?
You know, it's interesting. He sells T-shirts to little kids. He's a babyface to the other fans. He's a heel. It's perfect.
Yeah, it's kind of working, like, with the whole Cena thing, you know? I mean, like, you know, the adults hate him, but the kids love him. And,
right.
Yeah, and the females, too, so. for
And I think he's a great performer, and you know,
yeah.
And he's also become a great in-ring performer too. So,
see, what I guess what I wanted to talk about with the whole Bray Wyatt thing was you talk about like Undertaker, who's probably wrestled his final match at WrestleMania against Roman Reigns. If you know how he keeps it to the best, you don't see him make those appearances, you know, ever so often. Right. Do you think, though, if, like, Bray Wyatt would have kept that character? Because you've seen him, you know, you see him take pictures with, like, Stephanie McMahon. And do you think keeping kayfabe would have protected his character and make him more interesting?
No. We live in a more sophisticated time.
Yeah.
You know, you're looking back on... We no longer live where everything is black and white, black and white. You know. I watch movies... Let me try to think of more. I know Vin Diesel can't take a car and jump it over four ramps.
Yeah.
So, I suspend my belief if I went to see that movie.
Yeah, especially by the 57th time they've made it. Yeah, I can't wait to see Fast and Furious 75.
I don't, you know, sometimes wrestling fans want, you know. I think wrestling is stronger today than it's ever been.
What do you think of the whole Raw and SmackDown, the shakeup that happened this week? Who do you think came out on top of it?
Well, I thought both programs were helped. And I liked that it wasn't like a wholesale redraft where you had to go, who, what? I think I'm looking forward on SmackDown, Kevin Owens and AJ Styles. And I think Charlotte coming in will help the woman. I thought it was very nicely distributed.
When it comes to those two brands that Jeff was talking about, Raw and SmackDown, and obviously the WWE is trying to compete with themselves and give that illusion because there's no longer a WCW for them to compete against, do you think other promotions, and I've brought this up to Jeff and I've asked certain people and want to get your take on it. For me, the WWE is the juggernaut. They're the huge game in town. Doesn't look like anybody's ever going to take them over. So when it comes to other places and promotions like Lucha Underground, for example, New Japan, Impact Wrestling, does it hurt now that kayfabe's done? Does it hurt the WWE right now to acknowledge those types of situations? There's more like legality. Obviously, you can't talk about TNA's history with AJ Styles because, you know, Impact Wrestling owns the library to it. Do you think the company should kind of acknowledge more?
They can talk about it. You know.
Why do you think they choose not to?
Yeah, but haven't they mentioned he's been a champion in other organizations?
Around the world, but they never mention, you know.
They never get specific with them, yeah.
Well, I guess they don't want to give a plug to a competitor.
But does that hurt them, though? Because how's it going to really hurt them? I mean, they're promoting and obviously giving free promotion to a company like, for example, Ring of Honor. But is Ring of Honor going to take over the WWE in the next 10, 20 years? No.
No.
Barry,
they just choose to pick Honor, which organizations they want to choose to honor, and, you know.
Barry,
wrestling. You guys are taking it too seriously.
It's still real to me, damn it, okay?
how did you get involved? When was your first wrestling match that you saw?
First wrestling match, I was really young. And it was supposed to be... Buddy Rogers was supposed to fight Bruno Sammartino. And Buddy Rogers... Back then, people didn't show up in matches. And Killer Kowalski came, fought him.
Oh, Killer Kowalski, wow.
Right, and I remember Argentina Apollo and this guy Dory Dixon and Bobo Brazil. So I go way back. But I used to watch it all the time. And I grew up in New York. And, of course, I watched it Saturday morning. And sometimes I had it Tuesday night. And I used to watch it almost religiously.
So what was the aspect? Were you more of a heel or were you more of a baby face? What did you lean towards?
Oh, back then, more of a baby face.
Oh, baby
face. I'm 5 years old. There was a guy called Skull Murphy who scared the hell out of me.
It just shows you how we've changed, right?
I actually met the two guys. When I first started doing Beyond the Mat, I went to Cauliflower Alley Club. And I met Dan Curtis and Mark Lewin, who I remember were a heel team. Now they're old men. I was telling them how much they scared me as a little kid.
They're probably like, us? Scared you? Come on. But it's funny how you mentioned that, right? You said you were 5 years old and you were scared to death of those. I mean, we're talking about now, like, we're talking professional wrestling. Now it's called sports entertainment. And maybe that 5 or 6 year old who would probably buy the John Cena Roman Reigns shirt because, oh, they're the hero, are actually probably rooting for the bad guy because they find them more interesting and have more dimensions behind it.
Maybe. I don't know if little kids. You go to those shows now, and you see the little kids that are always rooting still for the to the heroes.
I don't know. I've seen a couple saying Cena sucks and saying some other four-letter words that I'd be like...
That Barry wouldn't mind mentioning
yeah.
right now.
I've seen it. Yeah, I've seen it. So it's probably just the way society's been right now where it's like you said, things aren't black and white anymore.
Now, when you did the documentary, you were kind of like getting on at the peak of the Attitude Era. Your thoughts on...
I started filming before the Attitude Era. The Attitude Era happened while I was filming.
And just your thoughts on that. Is that... Can we ever get to that? Or was there a need to...
Gone beyond that.
Yeah? The reality era now?
I think we'll go
beyond past,
that.
Jeff.
You look at stuff... I mean, I've had the WWE Network since the beginning. And I watch matches. I used to think, this was great. And I watch them, I go, oh, my God, what was I on when I was watching?
I do the same thing when I look back at TV series and old movies.
And, you know, and the production value and, you know, and all the regional wrestling things. I used to think, oh, this is great. Now I look at it, I go, how could I even watch this? I think the quality of wrestling's better than it's ever been. I think the level of storytelling is as good as it's ever been. There's always going to be, you have to remember, we're now exposed to at least 5-6 hours of wrestling a week just from the WWE, right, network. And between that and USA and all that. And it's hard 52 weeks a year. There's going to be bad stuff. When I did the documentary, Vince would talk to me. He'd be quite honest about stuff he tried that flopped. But a lot of that is just volume. It's hard to produce 5 hours of TV, 5-6 hours of TV every week and have everything work.
No, definitely. I mean, back then, I couldn't get enough of. Now, it's oversaturated where it's like you don't really have to watch things live anymore. Everything is kind of on demand, and you can watch it at your own leisure.
Right.
Just going back real quick back on the documentary, though, kind of linking the two together with this this kayfabe you did on Nat Geo Explorer. When you did the documentary, it all came out, and it was all finalized, any resentment from maybe Vince or from WCW, just from promotion, saying, hey, this guy is trying to expose everything we're doing here. Did you get a lot of resistance and resentment for that?
No, none from WCW. They actually promoted the movie.
Oh, okay.
There was a problem Vince felt didn't like that the movie company was making money off characters he helped create. And I understood that. That was not, I was doing a documentary and, I understand why I felt that way. But it was not that I was exposing too much.
You were talking about, Vince, and, he's all we know, us growing up, as far as promoting,
Right.
Do you think that the future is in good hands with someone like Triple H, Paul Levesque, as probably the guy that's going to be running things in the in the future?
Sure, Paul's very smart. I spent a lot of time with Paul when I was doing the documentary.
Seems like he lived wrestling, right? He lives wrestling.
Yeah, he lives wrestling. He understands it, and he's also one of the guys. So I think he has a very good understanding of what these wrestlers go through.
What's the last event that you've attended personally?
The last event I attended personally was the NXT show in Los Angeles.
And how's that? How do you enjoy NXT?
I loved it. I thought it was like, ECW. The only thing I didn't like was I I got seats through I can't say who. And
okay.
I was on the hard camera. I was facing the hard camera.
The best seats.
And I realized that, and I was ringside, so I felt I had to react all the time. I go, shit, I'm on camera. I got to react to everything.
Barry, don't feel bad. I've always been the same way. Even when I'm not, and I think like all the focus is on me, I have to be like that obnoxious fan. Though I'm doing it because...
I wasn't obnoxious, but I just felt I couldn't sit there.
Oh, I'm not saying you were. I know I am, so... And oh yeah, of course. Oh, nowadays you look at the product and everybody's getting the fan reaction now. So whenever there's a maneuver done, the camera pans over the audience to get that reaction, which you probably thought you had to give on the hard camera. Now you're talking about that was the last one you went to, or the last one I don't know,
November.
November, okay. Can you still watch it as a fan now? I mean, is it still a part of you? Can you enjoy it as a product, or you never get too involved with
I
this guy should have gone over, that guy should have gone over, type of thing?
I can do that sometimes. That guy should go over. I wonder what's missing. Why isn't that guy going over? And that's part of the fun and the game of it, which I think makes it more even more enjoyable to watch because now it's trying to now you're trying to second guess the storylines. I still watch wrestling the same way I have most of my life, which is 95% of the time I can't believe I'm watching this. And then, but then there's 5% where I go, oh my God, I can't believe people don't love this. You know, if you get people in the right mindset, one thing I wanted to do in Beyond the Mat in the beginning was to get them to watch wrestling the way I look at it. And you see this part, you know, the art of it and the show business of it, theatricality of it. It's great. When it's done well.
Yes, when it's done well.
You can say the same thing about movies. You can say the same thing about theater or dance or whatever. When it's done well, it's brilliant. It's not always done well. It's hard to do real well.
It is, and especially it's hard to do well when it's in that live atmosphere environment. At least when you're doing a movie or a TV series or whatever, you can have a second take. There is no second take when it comes to wrestling.
Yeah. I wish the guys were a little less scripted.
Do you think they do that more because they're a publicly owned company now and they're afraid of something being said incorrectly that might offend anything? Because nowadays, I don't know if you admit this or not, or maybe you would. Everybody's so politically correct now. It's all very sensitive, so you want to be careful you don't offend anybody.
I like wrestling when it was not politically correct.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I enjoy about it. I don't know why. I guess, you know, before guys would come up through the territories and they would learn how to work the mic. Now they really I know in NXT they're teaching that. So there's some guys who are great. Kevin Owens is as good as anybody on the mic. You know, Chris Jericho's great on the mic. I mean, he's a veteran.
You said the magic word for Brian. Chris Jericho guy.
Drink it in, man.
He's great, and this last run was, I think, my favorite run of his.
I would probably say he's the last maybe of a dying breed now because of all the experience and all of the places he's traveled around the world. You would think maybe, you know, the way they're presenting it now in the WWE, like you said, it's scripted. Maybe everybody's now doing the exact same thing. So that's why you get the frustrations nowadays where it's like, yeah, I wish they really said what's on their mind.
Well, I think what's on their mind is to get the promo right.
to remember the lines.
A lot of that's with experience. I mean, Kevin Owens has been in the business 15 years. Samoa Joe's been in the business 15, 20 years. And they have experience. A lot of the younger guys just don't have that much experience, so they've got it's a longer learning curve.
If you could do another documentary on wrestling, and if there was a topic you wanted to address, what would it be?
I don't know.
Oh, you stumped him, Jeff. You stumped him.
The culture in the locker room is very interesting.
It's all like video games now. everyone's playing video games and.
Oh yeah, that wouldn't be that interesting. But it's just it's like a family, and like all families, there are parts that are great about families traveling together, and this part is very dysfunctional. And I find that from a sociological endpoint, that's an interesting subject for me.
When you talk about the backstage, you know, the way the atmosphere is in there compared to obviously like maybe the 90s or the 80s, right. When you hear these things being talked about Mauro Ranallo and JBL, is that more of a society thing where like, oh, it's the bullying scenario right now, or maybe JBL's caught in the past? Is that an interesting dynamic too, do you think, is maybe brought more from the old school and at this point would be something?
I think so, probably. I think... you know, I didn't see any bullying going. I heard stories about it. I didn't see any when I was there. I mean, when I was filming the movie, there were basically, I told everybody, if you don't want to be in it, just tell me. I don't want to put anybody in this thing that doesn't want to be in it. So there tended to be one locker room where everybody wanted to be in it, and the other locker room where the people didn't want to be in it were in it. So I never went in the other locker room. So I didn't have as much contact with them. And I would talk to some of those guys. Some of them went out of the way to be very cooperative with me and telling me why they didn't want to be in it. And The Undertaker was great, you know, explaining to me and make sure that wanted to know where the camera was going to be so he could make sure he wouldn't be in the way and all that stuff. So he was great.
Barry, you read my mind. Talking about The Undertaker,
yeah.
If that was his final match, most likely as it was, what are your thoughts on The Undertaker, his career, and just everything he's done and what he's meant to WWE, and your experience?
Well, I think what I saw backstage was how much he meant in the locker room, because he controlled the locker rooms. He had a big say. You know, he was like very much a leader. He had a phenomenal career. I mean, I remember when he was Mean Mark Calloway, the palest wrestler in the United States.
Still is.
Now Sheamus takes that flag, and he.
But you know, pride. It's amazing playing one character, even though they turned into the American Badass for a while. How long that character sustained? You know, and having said that, because like I said, I'm not into supernatural stuff. I appreciated it. I always appreciated it.
Yeah, and I also appreciate, I think the fans, I don't speak for a lot of people, I'm sure I speak for the fans, they appreciated the commitment he did, because you mentioned too, like he would talk to you and say, listen, I don't want to be on camera, because he was very committed to that character, which just shows his professionalism and his enthusiasm to do it.
Yeah, he had a great career. I'm glad it's over for his own health's sake, you know, and I'm sure he's glad it's over, and I hope he has. I understand he's going for surgery. I hope it's successful, and he's has a long, healthy life.
Would you think
giving fans tons of pleasure?
What'd you think about the streak ending at 30? Did you think it was the right time, right place, right person?
I was surprised. It was the right person. I was surprised. I liked it. I wasn't expecting it.
Imagine if Barry was at on hard camera there, he would probably would have been WWE would probably
popped.
Be using. He would have been.
I popped at home. I went, oh my god! I didn't expect that.
Yeah, they needed you in the Superdome or the Silverdome, whichever one you know you want to call it. But
yeah, I was, and I loved Paul Heyman's reaction.
Oh yeah,
did he sell that?
How good is Paul Heyman? He's like when he comes on, I need to stop whatever I'm doing and watch him talk because it's it's awesome.
What was it like conversing with him?
When I was in a documentary, I used to say, what are you doing in wrestling? With your gift of gab, you could run small countries.
And what was his response?
I know. He was funny. I like Paul a lot.
He is. One of the greatest minds in
professional
wrestling.
And just the very fact that, like, you know, ECW, you know the stories that, you know, sometimes they couldn't cut the checks. Sometimes, you know, they'd have to be doing their own merchandise. Tommy Dreamer and Bubba Ray would be doing the merchandise.
I used to say it was a I one time said, Paul, you have a T-shirt company that does wrestling.
Yeah. And no matter what, though, no matter how low, everybody would... you know, would flock to him, and they would be on his side, whether, you know, morale was never low, because...
He was... I mean, what you saw in the film was a piece of that speech.
Yeah.
That speech was incredible, but I was there other nights when he gave speeches that were equally as good, if not better.
Yeah, and I mean, I've seen his documentary that he's done for WWE, and it's a real motivator because it's all about hustle, you know, and talk about a guy, you know, he was doing the promos in someone's business, I think in his parents' basement or something like that, and the way they would do it, but just how he could, you know, from his words, he could lead a small country. So honestly, and it's just amazing. I really am a huge Paul Heyman mark, and. Yeah,
I'm a Heyman guy.
You're a Paul Heyman guy. And wrapping up here with Barry.
That's when I'm embarrassed when I say stuff like that.
No, don't be, man. Look at this. We're in our mid 30s, and we're still buying on WWE Shop, and we're still, you know, doing the sayings, and we're doing the too sweet and stuff like that. So no,
and for those that don't understand it too, that's their loss. We're not here to explain it to those of why we say we're a Paul Heyman guy or too sweet or stuff like that. They just don't understand, and they never will.
You know, I found when I did the documentary, so many, let's call them mainstream people, came out and said to me, I've been a wrestling fan all my life, and I've watched it, and we were able to talk about it. I wanted to make a film that wrestling fans could be proud of that didn't make fun of fans and make fun of wrestling.
Barry, it's still talked about now, and we're almost 20 years now since it came out. And, you know, that's the first one when you go YouTube and it comes on, that's the first one that your eyes are drawn to. And it's so good, and you can watch it over and over, and you learn new things.
Safe to say that you succeeded in that front.
Well, there hadn't been a lot of wrestling documentaries before. So.
No, but I mean, honestly.
You know, it's funny. When I was making the movie, the studio, Universal, came to me and said, should we do a survey of what wrestling? I kept saying my goal is to make this for people who don't even like wrestling will like this film, right?
Yeah.
I said, I'm not worried about wrestling fans. And they said, should we do a marketing survey to see what wrestling fans want, Mike? I go, I'm the marketing survey. I'm a wrestling fan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm no different than them. I know what they want. I know as a wrestling fan what I would like to see. So I'm just going to put that all in there.
Yeah, I'm telling you, beyond the mat.
I'm not worried about wrestling fans liking this. What I'm worried about is people who go, ooh, wrestling, ooh, and think and look at it and go, hey, you know, that's interesting. I never thought of it that way.
Again, though, I put Beyond the Mat 1, and then I think Wrestling with Shadows 1A. But, Barry, thank you so much for giving us your time.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure, guys.
Don't be a stranger. We'd love to have you on again, see what else
you're
up to.
Whenever you want.
Thank you so much. Hope you had a good time, and we'll definitely talk down the road, Barry. Thank you so much.
Okay, take care.
All right, that was Barry Blaustein. Great interview, man. And, you know, we actually accidentally – look, we're not going to take credit for this because we kind of, like, walked into it, but – last week was the 20-year anniversary of ECW Barely Legal, and that was actually the match with Terry Funk, and that was actually what he was covering on Beyond the Mat. And we actually got into ECW, and we were talking about just the influence of Paul Heyman had on everybody, and wow, just a great one. And it's good to get him, you know, kind of in the beginning, had to kind of egg him on, but then once he got comfortable with us, you know, he opened up like a flower to us, and, you know, you get such a great interview with Barry Blaustein. Thanks a lot to him. Brian, what a great, great interview.
It was, you know, and again, I'm not kissing everybody's butt. I think all the interviews you do here with everybody that we have on the show is great. Yeah, I mean, it took a little time to warm up. But at the same time, it's like, you know, it's like a match. You're trying to feel each other out and see what's going on. As soon as we start talking about it, it's basically three guys talking about wrestling and the impact it has. And, you know, exactly. Barry has a great insight on the business because he's really part of that. You know, not to mention also the documentary we talked on Nat Geo where he talked about, you know, breaking kayfabe and how important that is. We've gone, Jeff, from such a pinnacle. We talked about the Attitude Era and Beyond the Mat being one of the documentaries for me that kind of opened my eyes backstage. We kind of knew things were happening in the back. We knew all the things that was predetermined, stuff like that. But all the stuff that was happening backstage that we didn't really know or didn't really have idea of in terms of storylines and business and things like that. So that was such eye-opening too. And how it's evolved to this point now where, you know, you and I are doing a show about wrestling. We're talking to people. They're talking about their characters and storylines. It's just stuff you didn't really do back then. And in my opinion, Barry's a huge pioneer of that because his documentary definitely opened the eyes of not only a lot of people, but for example, what Barry said, he wasn't trying to please us, the wrestling fan. He was trying to show other people the other side that people somehow think it's like a taboo or they don't want to associate themselves
definitely.
With pro wrestling.
Yeah.
He made pro wrestling more accessible to people to say, hey, listen, guys, it's entertainment. It's a show. Enjoy for what it is. It actually is, as though they don't call themselves sports entertainment, these are the most athletic guys in the world. So pay them the respect they deserve.
Yeah, and again, one of the best documentaries out there for wrestling. It is like a must if you are a fan of this business. So thanks to go out to Barry Blaustein. Now, listen, we got to touch on the whole Braun Strowman and The Big Show. I will get to The Big Show in a little bit, but just your thoughts. I've already seen it. From what I hear, it's kind of a pain in the ass to do that with the ring, to have it collapse. I think the referee, I could see the referee was kind of bracing for it, but then he just like lost his balance. So
he wiped out.
And listen, I got to tell you one thing, man. Braun Strowman is one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet because on his Instagram, he took a picture of that, and at the bottom, he goes, I'll never forget what you've done, and I'm doing this, you know, not verbatim, but he goes, I'll never forget this night and what you've done. Thank you, hashtag Big Show. And I think that the guy is a great guy. I think he respects his business. I think you called him Green Strowman a few months.
Braun Greenman. I used to when he first started in the business. You know, I take that back now. But again, I think it was apropos for that time when I was writing articles for BustedOpenNation.com was that he was very green. Didn't have much of a personality. He was a strong man. Now he's gone leaps and bounds. He is his own man.
Yeah.
He doesn't need the Wyatt family. And the Wyatt family doesn't need him. Well, maybe they do now. Maybe Bray Wyatt does. But he's just jumped leaps and bounds in terms of captivating the audience. Looking at him, he nails his promos. In the ring, he hits you with surprises. He actually psychologically fights do I dare I say it, like a big man? And that's something that's it's pretty much lacking since the Big Show in his heydays during the Attitude Era and much into the 2000s. So, you know, congrats to Braun Strowman. Well-deserved. But here's the funny thing, too, Jeff. We talk about this, right? And he's supposed to be a heel. People are supposed to hate him. They're supposed to be afraid of him. But you talk about him like he's a teddy bear. And, you know, he pretty much is. Everybody says nice things about
him. Listen to Talking Shop on Talking Jericho.
And this goes back to the whole kayfabe thing, yeah, Jeff. Man. Like, here's the thing. He's on Talking Jericho doing Talking Shop with the guys. Jokes. Who knew Braun Strowman was a funny guy and had a personality? He does stuff on Instagram, takes pictures, seems like a lovable guy. So it's like we're in a different age now where, although he's supposed to be this monster, and he goes, brah. You can't help but appreciate.
Wait, did it again?
Bro.
Oh, man. It was awesome that you did it again.
Yeah, but it's like you can't help but like the guy and root for him because you hear his story, which, you know, Roman Reigns, we don't know much about him. That's why we hate him so much, and that's why we chant when he gets flipped over in the ambulance, you deserve it. So it's just funny how it works because to me right now, Braun Strowman, people can deny it or not, or they can admit it because it's common sense, is a babyface.
Yeah,
playing a heel.
Exactly. They did that last week with him, and, you know, the whole ambulance thing was hilarious, and everyone's saying to Roman Reigns, you deserve it, you deserve it. So, I don't know, man. Like, I just have a lot of respect for Braun Strowman and what he's doing, too. So, and, you know, the Big Show, you know, it's getting towards the end, and he was at towards the end, they saw that they were saying, thank you, Big Show, and you could see he, you know, was, you know, tearing up, too. So maybe, you know, it just... It comes closer to the end for the Big Show.
Well, we'll wait for that to happen. When it does happen, I think you're right. The end is kind of near. I think he wanted his match with Shaquille O'Neal to kind of be his last WrestleMania. I don't think he'll be doing WrestleMania again in New Orleans. Yeah, you hope you do for one more go-around if he makes it that far. I mean, Mark Henry said the same thing. Look what happened. He's still here, right?
Yeah.
For Big Show, though, it's just, man, it's such a great career. Everything he's done. He mentioned something, Jeff, I don't know if you remember during the Stone Cold Steve Austin podcast he did. He said that maybe his biggest thing is he kept jumping back and forth too many times.
Like 100 times.
To
one
please
day's
the business.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't think that hurts him in terms of his legacy. I think he's a Hall of Famer. But I think for him, you know, it didn't showcase the dominance and talent he had as a character.
Yeah, exactly. When he came here to WWE in the beginning, 99, as Paul White, kind of was like, okay.
Losing to Stone Cold Steve Austin after three centers. I'm like, really?
There was a little bit of a not wasted talent, but just like, man, could have done so much more. And I think his biggest regret will be not getting in as great a shape as he is now towards the end of his career as he was before. You know, if in that middle he could have, you know, done this, clearly he would have been, you know, an even bigger star than he is. But still, the Big Show's done a lot for this business, one of the good guys, too. So, you know, as he winds it down.
And you shook his hand one time in New York.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
but a nice guy, too.
Another nice guy, who's done a lot. And as he winds down, too, you know, we just want to say thank you, too. There's another great spot.
I hope more fans do say thank you, as opposed to in the past saying just retire. I hope they do say thank you because, you know, as much as we talk about Jeff Brock Lesnar and Braun Strowman, now he's kind of taking that torch and that mantle as a big guy. I hope people can sit back and now appreciate a guy like Big Show because, you know, he was ahead of his time. He was our Andre the Giant.
And I think he was a little mad at WrestleMania because he wanted to have that passing of the torch kind of with Braun. And I think he was a little annoyed that the guys kind of rushed it and they threw him out so fast. So I think that he had his moment to redo it with Braun, pass the torch this past Monday night in Columbus, Ohio. So, you know, a great story. But again, you know, Braun Strowman's just, you know, just destroying everybody. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
The star is rising fast, Jeff.
And just wrapping up, man, again, Mick Foley going for surgery, hip surgery. Wish him the best, speed recovery to Mick.
That I say was about time because he was dealing with a lot of pain. And with a guy like Mick Foley who's dealt with pain his entire career, no need to do that. So you're right, Jeff. Speedy recovery for Mick Foley.
And, of course, hey, you know, there's possibility that Broken Matt Hardy could be coming back soon. It looks like WWE is trying to work out a deal with Impact to, you know, have Matt Hardy do it. He still interjects the Broken Matt Hardy in there. So there might be a tease coming up, and maybe, you know, they split up into different things. But it looks more like that Broken Matt Hardy character will be coming back to the WWE.
Which it should. And when WWE sets their mind on doing something.
Just petty by Impact to do that to Matt.
Yeah, but I get there are enough dollar signs and enough zeros where Impact will let go of that pettiness and just take it to the bank because they need money.
Yeah.
And the WWE can't afford it. So, yeah, we do hope we see Broken Matt Hardy. That's why he was brought in because of what he did at Impact and all the success he had to reinvent himself. And Brother Nero, too, for Jeff Hardy. I think these two are good as a team. But if it does work out and they get the broken character, I don't see this team lasting much longer.
And of course, WrestlePro comes back next week at the Starland Ballroom, April 29th. You'll have guys like DDP there, the new WWE Hall of Famer. We'll have Swoggle and Michael Elgin will be there, and Moose will be there too, and our buddy Dave Destruction will be there too, Pat Buck, and you know, it's going to be a great night. I think the Jersey Wrecking Crew are ready to paint Sayreville red. I think we're going to do...
paint Sayreville red, Jeff, and I'll say this, and if Pat Buck has a problem with it, you know, he can talk to me about it. You know, he was nice enough to take a picture, but again, I have no problem stepping in the ring with a guy like Pat Buck. You know, the Jersey Wrecking Crew will be taking over WrestlePro pretty soon.
Yeah, I think that's some other guy. I think Sam Roberts is going to be there too, so so he'll be there too. So again, we'll be at WrestlePro, excited to
oh, he don't want out of me.
And of course, to you know, some sad news too. And look, as much as you dislike Roman Reigns, you got a feel for him this week, the passing of his older brother Matt Inouye, Rosie, you know, better known to WWE fans. Listen, man, our condolences go out to Roman Reigns in this tough time. You know, what can you say, man? Life is precious. Hold your family close. Say it. Tell everybody I love you. Do not leave or hold grudges, because this is not worth it, man. And our prayers and thoughts go out to the Inouye family and Roman Reigns.
Yes, definitely. Well said. Can't say anything more. But the thing is, the legacy, the lineage Samoan heritage has on it follows Roman Reigns as well. And like you said, you just, you know, your thoughts and prayers are with it. And going through this time of grief, you just wish for the best out of everybody.
We end on a sad note, but, you know, again, Brian, another great show here on the High Spot Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast. Next week, Brian, we have a great guest, Aaron Rift from NoDQ.com. If you're a wrestling fan, you definitely catch his website.
You know who he is.
His YouTube series, NoDQ. Just awesome, awesome guy. He will be here next week to preview Payback, and we actually might play a game with him. Book this. We'll probably debut Book This with Aaron. We'll totally surprise him with it, but we'll get more into what Book This is next week. So Aaron Rift will join us from No
Just
DQ.
Broke the surprise, though.
What do you mean?
You just
won't tell him what it's about. I won't tell him what it's about. I won't tell him the rules, because I don't think we even know the rules yet, but we'll play.
No, we make Book this up as it go along, folks.
Exactly. Just like this whole show just made up, and Barry, I don't even know if that really was Barry Blaustein from... Beyond the Mat. But again, Brian, great show. Follow us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast. We're on iTunes now, man.
Yeah, Google Play.
One small step for man, one giant leap for the Jersey Wrecking Crew.
Yeah, before you know it, we'll be streaming live as well on YouTube or Facebook Live too. So guys, keep you know, like us on Facebook as well. Follow us on Twitter. Get those comments on iTunes as well.
Yeah, let's the get more those you guys, follows, man. The more let's you guys
follow us, the more you guys interact, the more we will surprise you with special guests and things we have for the future that will keep you updated on our Twitter accounts and our Facebook pages. So please, and follow us on Instagram as well. So we have all these outlets. Guys, please just listen to it, follow it, and support us, because you know, we do this not only for our benefit because we enjoy it and love it so much, but we do it for the, you know, I used to call myself the conscious mind of wrestling. I think we see it from a perspective that a lot of other people see it too, and I think if people listen to more of it, you'll see a lot more in the near future.
Yeah, so again, follow us on Twitter at High Spot Podcast. Everything is at High Spot Podcast. For the Trendsetter, I am Jeff Martin, saying so long. Aaron Rift joins us next week. NoDQ.com Payback Preview, baby. See you next week. And again, life with the Jersey Wrecking Crew is just too sweet. Value Matters is up next.